24-year-old Jennifer Kessy disappeared January 24, 2006. She was last seen at her condo on Conroy Road.
We're going to solve a missing persons case, which has haunted Orlando investigators.
So we're still waiting for that one person to come through with the one bit of information that could bring Jennifer home.
This is Unconcluded, a real-time investigative podcast looking into the 2006 disappearance of Jennifer Kessy in Orlando, Florida. I'm Sean Gerd. Way back in episode 1, we discussed our plans for this investigation, and among those plans was the intention of taking another look at the existing evidence related to Jennifer's disappearance. In a cold case investigation, which this is, even if the Orlando Police Department refuses to officially label it as such, an important step is to look back at the existing evidence and see if something was missed, and also to reconsider what's known and possibly make different conclusions. But that's where the problem lies here. There isn't a whole lot of evidence in this case to start with, and even if there was, it's not available to us, so we find ourselves in the predicament of not having much to work with. No case file, no evidence box, basically nothing. But at the same time, that's okay, because simply following the path of the last 11 years isn't likely to lead anywhere. For all this time, it's gone nowhere. We've been out to leave our own trail, but at the same time, we aren't foolish enough to think that following parts of the original path isn't necessary. Which brings us to today. For all of you out there right now, those of you who aren't just listening, but being an active part of this investigation with us, it's become clear that it's time to come together and look at parts of the original path. Those parts which are known, the law enforcement searches, to see if, as a group, we can piece together these breadcrumbs into a relevant path upon which we can build. We're going to take a short break for our sponsorship of this episode, and then we're going to jump in to the known search areas in this investigation, starting way back in January of 2006. Today's episode of Unconcluded is sponsored in part by Stamps.com. These days, you can get practically everything on demand. Like this podcast. You listen whenever you want. It's convenient for you. So, why are you still going to the post office and dealing with their limited hours when you can get postage on demand with Stamps.com? Anything you can do at the post office, you can do right from your own desk with Stamps.com. You can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package using your own computer and printer. And unlike the post office, Stamps.com never closes, so you can get postage whenever you need it, 24/7. I love Stamps.com because a lot of the work I do for this podcast isn't during traditional hours. It's in nights and weekends, when the post office just isn't available. So it's super convenient to be able to just log on to Stamps.com and take care of my postage needs. Right now, you can use our podcast name, Unconcluded, for this special offer, a 4-week trial, including postage and a digital scale. So don't wait. Go to stamps.com before you do anything else and click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Unconcluded. That's stamps.com. Enter Unconcluded. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. Jennifer was reported missing on January 24th, 2006, and it's that day that the search began, even if not officially. Jennifer's own friends and family combed the area around her condo, Mosaic at Millennia, and also that of the nearby mall, the Mall at Millenia. A few days later, after her car was discovered, just over a mile away at the Huntington on the Green, search parties would begin searching wooded areas by the Huntington complex and in between there and the Mosaic at Millenia, Jennifer's building. Police also reportedly searched storage closets in the back of Jennifer's three-story building and the scrub pines and brush at the back of the Mosaic property. Among the first media reports of searches for the missing 24-year-old was a Local 6 news report of a search on Monday, January 30th. As stated in the Local 6 report, police officers searched a heavily wooded area near the location where Jennifer Kesey's abandoned car was discovered, and a scent was picked up in the area. The reporter stated, "One of the two strongest clues that the Orlando Police Department is sharing with the media is the scent was picked up in the woods." And the report also made note of the search being continued from the previous days. Then, according to a later Action 6 news report, officers on horseback continued a grid search Wednesday, February 1st for Jennifer Kesey. That Wednesday, teams of police officers and sheriff deputies were searching areas inside the boundaries of Texas Avenue to the west, Orange Blossom Trail to the east, Oak Ridge Road to the south, and Holden Avenue to the north. It is reportedly the fourth day in a row that officers had searched on horseback for clues. In the same report, it was also stated that police began what they were calling a new grid search, based on tips that had been coming in. Sheriff's deputies with the mounted patrol had jumped off of their horses and over a fence along Texas Avenue just off of John Young Parkway after a citizen had called in a tip. Meanwhile, over the first weekend in February, members of Child Watch of North America had been assembling volunteers at the Mall of Millenia and coordinated a massive search of the areas around Jennifer's condo and the Huntington on the Green. By February 7th, 2 weeks after Jennifer's disappearance, police were still on the hunt. On that Tuesday, they searched an abandoned hotel on Vinland Road. The abandoned hotel was slated to be demolished, and police had a cadaver dog check all of the rooms along with Orlando officers. However, it turned up nothing. The next search was reported on Sunday night, February 12th. Based on a sighting at a boarding house, a tip was called in that the police considered credible. They descended upon an apartment at 1414 40th Street. The location of this home was just 2.6 miles from the Mosaic at Millenia. And in fact, if you were to drive directly from Jennifer's condo to the location of this home, you would turn and drive directly past the Huntington on the Green on Texas Avenue. The location is owned by an individual with more than 20 arrests on his record, and the location of this home is in a seedy area with apparent drug activity. "We had information that she was seen there and that she was seen alive and was being held against her will," Police Sergeant Richard Ring said at the time, continuing to add, "Detectives working the case interviewed that person, and that person apparently gave them enough information to make them concerned." Further record shows that the SWAT team searched inside the structure but did not find Jennifer or any sign that she had been there in the past weeks. Later, Sergeant Rich Ring would conclude by saying, "The results were negative. She was not in the residence, and we are interviewing people there to see if there's a possibility that she might have been there, due to the fact that it was credible, because this is what we would expect if it was our family member. We acted appropriately, I think." It was shortly after this that the detective on the case was making statements that the Jennifer Kesey case would come to a conclusion by the end of the next week. However, he didn't mention why and said that that would hurt the investigation. They claimed to have very viable evidence and mentioned that part of the investigation involves tracking down names and locations of transients. Of course, we can now say that they clearly oversold their hand. The next reported search took a bit of a different turn.
I believe she was abducted at the mobile station on Kirkman and L.B. McLeod. That somebody climbed in the back seat of her car and held a knife to her throat. So we believe she is in a pipe around here.
Specifically, she says Jennifer's down a waste management manhole off L.B. McLeod Road.
An Orlando police detective tells me they have searched waste management here based on Giono's tip. They've even drained a retention pond. So what did they find? Apparently chicken bones and a whole lot of sludge. They say they are willing to search this area again with new concrete evidence. Jennifer Kessie is actually here.
Sergeant Ring would make a statement about the search. The psychic calls we have been getting about the Kessie case, we are not discounting them. There is the possibility that there is valid information we can use. Detectives at that point had received 12 calls from people who identified themselves as psychics. Sergeant Ring would continue. There is also the possibility that a person who knows information about the case, who is reluctant to use a regular channel to communicate with us, might actually go to a psychic and give us tips that can help us find Miss Kessie. So early on in the investigation, detectives were even using information from psychics to help them find areas to search. The next known search wouldn't be until nearly the end of 2008. On October 10th, 2008, Texas EquiSearch arrived in Orlando to conduct searches in the wooded area off of John Young Parkway near Mosaic, which had been searched in 2006 as well. The team actually had arrived to look specifically for Kaylee Anthony, a 3-year-old child who was missing at the time, but they were also briefed on Jennifer Kessie. Ultimately, nothing would come of the search. We now fast forward to June 2009.
Well, Martha, this is the area where Orlando police, with the help of an independent search team, looked for any trace of Jennifer Kessie. This is the corner of John Young Parkway and Millennia Boulevard in Orange County. And this search came about because over the weekend, the same independent search team came out here with canines and radar equipment and found a possible area of interest in this field. This is about a 15 to 20 acre area that we're talking about. They found this area of interest. They contacted the lead investigator in the Jennifer Kessie case right away. And that's why today, this afternoon at 1:30, Orlando police came out here to try to look for any trace of Jennifer Kessie. But police are telling us that search has come up empty. They are happy, though, that this search team contacted them first. They say they're relying on these people who have tips or independent search teams to come forward, give them information, and then they together will do a proper search. But again, this search this afternoon here in Orange County has come up empty, but police are saying this in a way gives them hope that they will find Jennifer Kessie alive someday possibly, and they're saying they want to keep those tips coming. They want to keep this case out in the media. Jennifer Kessie was last seen 3.5 years ago at her apartment complex, which is not far from here. So this area of Millennia Boulevard has always been of interest because of how close Jennifer Kessie lived to this area. But again, the search in this field behind me today has come up empty.
As you just heard, this June 2009 search was initiated by an independent search group who had asked Drew Kessie, Jennifer's dad, if there was a specific area he thought maybe they should focus on. Here's more of what he had to say.
Correct, yeah.
And what were you thinking in the back of your mind?
Well, it's easy to get rid of a body is what I'm thinking. If you have loads of dirt coming in and you have heavy equipment filling in half of a lake and you have flattening of the ground so they can build condos that never got built, it's easy to get rid of. If you ask me, you keep bringing dirt in and you're filling on top and on top and on top. It just seems prime to me, and really the property is connected adjacent to Jennifer's property in the back.
The summer of 2009 lent itself to several searches related to Jennifer's disappearance. Just a month later, in July of 2009, roughly 60 experienced searchers, including firefighters, police officers, and canine handlers, headed out from a command post on John Young Parkway and L.B. McLeod near First Baptist of Orlando Church. At the time, Drew Kessie was quoted as saying, "What it's made up of is basically 6 or 7 groups from around the state of Florida. They're total professionals, and we're not even bringing volunteers for this. It will be strictly a professional search. The search started on Saturday morning, and searchers were working by ground, boat, and air, looking in the areas near Jennifer's condominium, Orlando International Airport, and Ocoee.
After long hours in the heat, the two-day search for missing Orlando woman Jennifer Kessie has ended. Throughout the weekend, her parents and search crews looked for any sign of Kessie. As West 2's Danielle Bellini reports, even though this weekend turned up nothing, the search is far from over.
Jen's parents, Drew and Joyce Kessie, want peace and closure. But until that day comes, today, they have the support from agencies across the state, and that support is hard to miss.
You have a lot of people that have no motive other than the passion in their heart and the willingness and the desire and the training to want to try to help.
Ultimately, again, after a search, the 3-mile radius around John Young Parkway turned up no answers. And so the frustrations of over 3 years of hunting, searching, and looking with nothing to show for it would continue. This episode is also sponsored in part by Kind. Have you ever tried a Kind bar? You might have seen them in your local grocery store or coffee shop or gym. They make delicious, healthy snacks using whole ingredients you can recognize and pronounce. Well, if you're ready to try some tasty and healthy snacks, we've got a special deal for you. You can try 10 Kind bars for free. All you have to pay is shipping. When you order the sample box, you'll also get to try Kind's Snack Club, where you'll receive monthly snacks at a discount and get members-only bonuses. You shouldn't have to choose between your health and taste when it comes to snacking. That's why both award-winning chefs and nutritionists love and recommend Kind bars. I tried their 10 snack sample box myself, and I loved the dark chocolate nuts and sea salt. In fact, I just ate one right before I started recording this episode. Pick up your free sample box by going to kindsnacks.com/unconcluded. That's kindsnacks.com/unconcluded. Thanks to Kind for supporting this show. Remember, when you support our sponsors, you help support this podcast.
During the past 4 years, the search for a missing Orlando woman intensified this morning. Jennifer Kessie vanished from her condo near the Mall at Millenia in January of 2006. Every other search for the 24-year-old to this point has failed to find her. But West 2's Dave McDaniel live now where this new search is happening. It's near the intersection of OBT and Oak Ridge. So, Dave, what led police search teams to that area?
Well, they're really only saying that they've had a tip that takes them to this area. Now, they point out that they've had 1,000 leads since her disappearance, but obviously this is a tip that they believe is very credible. We want to zoom in and we want to show you the area that is central to the search. We can tell you after talking more extensively with police and actually talking with Jennifer's father that cadaver dogs came in here, dogs with a good track record, and they have hit on this area. And that's exactly why the search has intensified. Dozens of searchers combing the area, digging with a backhoe, using ground-penetrating radar, all hoping to find the answer. What happened to Jennifer Kessie back in January 2006?
They are doing what we've done before, based on information that we believe to have been credible, what you call a dig. They're using some ground radar units, and we've got several agencies out here, and we have taken in over 1,000 leads. I can't say any. I do not have any specific information about what it is that led the investigators to this area. I mean, the Kessies want to know what happened to their daughter, and so does the Orlando Police Department, and so does everybody in the whole country.
The tip that led to this search came from an unnamed informant, and we suspected it must have been big because police spent the entire day searching this field. But it eventually fizzled. And we must update you too. Scott and I had planned to actually visit this particular search site on one of our recent trips to Orlando. But when we arrived, The entire place was, well, a little bit different. It's now the location of a giant Walmart supercenter. With the ensuing parking lots and other structures, what remains of that field search back in 2010 isn't much. Here's the wrap-up audio from that search, but be forewarned, the audio quality isn't the best.
Well, unfortunately, they did not. You know, earlier today, we were told that this entire field might actually yield some clues as to what exactly happened to Jennifer Kessy. In fact, an area on the other side of the field was their target. They really thought that they would find something there. But any hopes of a conclusion in this case vanished after about 5 to 6 hours of looking. It was shoulder to shoulder at one point, 60 people across. The emergency response team looking for any hint to where Jennifer Kessy might be. But it was one specific area that got the most attention, a backhoe to get into and under the soil. Much of that soil was sifted to see if there were any of the tiniest clues. Even ground-penetrating radar was used. Jennifer Kessy vanished late January 2006. The 24-year-old has not been seen since. There had been other searches, but cadaver dogs had made cops think this tip was better. It wasn't.
We did what we wanted to do out here, and we didn't find anything of evidentiary value as it relates to Jennifer Kessy or really anything else.
We wish we could have brought Jennifer home. We've always said for the good or the bad, and we wish we could have brought Jennifer home today.
We're strong, and we are committed as ever to continue in our fight to give Jennifer the best chance to be found. She deserves that.
The next major search for Jennifer Kessy would take place in 2012. More than 100 officers searched a wooded area off of International Drive, just north of World Center Drive, with a command center at the Partners Federal Credit Union. The investigators had been waiting to search the area for about 6 months, but there was originally too much water covering the ground.
Breaking news first at 4, a new search has just concluded for a local woman who's been missing for 6 years. Good afternoon. I'm Jim Payne.
I'm Aixa Diaz. Jennifer Kessy vanished in 2006. All day, teams have been scouring a wooded area in South Orange County, hoping to solve a case they deemed exhausted 2 years ago.
Now, Chopper 2 was over the search area. Today's search required a massive effort to cover a massive area. West 2's Dave McDaniel has been following the search teams all day. And Dave, where exactly are you and what brought the searchers there?
Well, we are basically about 3 or 4 miles south of SeaWorld on International Drive, a part of International Drive that a lot of people aren't all that familiar with. We're very near World Center Drive. The investigators came here because they had a tip that this area might have some clues to Jennifer Kessy's disappearance, and they said when they got that tip, the area was too wet. Only now is it dry enough for them to get in and investigate. On ATVs and on horseback, a swarm of emergency responders with machetes. This 800-acre wooded area was too wet to search when the tip first came in. Orlando police tell us they're not even sure when the tip came in, but once they determined the site was one which could be searched, they sent in more than 70 people. Canines to see if they could sniff out any clues, boots on the ground to see if any evidence can solve this mystery. And unfortunately for the Kessy family, the Orlando Police Department just released that the search has concluded and that nothing of significance was found. But still, both Drew and Joyce Kessy came out and spoke with us just a few moments ago. Both of them thanked the Orlando Police Department and all of the members of law enforcement for their continued search and asked everybody in the community to keep Jennifer Kessy in their thoughts.
That would be the last search until December of 2015. And this would be one of the first searches that took place outside of Orlando. The search was conducted at the Sands Key area of Biscayne National Park, within a short driving distance of Miami. Orlando detectives had worked with the National Park Service to lead a land, air, and sea search of the island. But ultimately, again, no answers. And that pretty much wraps up the known search locations related to Jennifer Kessy over the years. But there's one more thing I want to talk about while we're on the topic of searches. But this one is a search that may not have been done. But before we do that, I want to take just a moment to tell you about another podcast you may enjoy. Since you're listening to this show, I already know you probably love crime podcasts just like me. So I want to take a minute to tell you about a new podcast I think you'll love, and it's called Deliberations. Anyone who's immersed themselves into true crime and felt a sense of injustice upon hearing a controversial verdict has likely wondered, what happened inside that jury room? In each season of Deliberations, a controversial murder trial is scripted and recorded. It's then played for a jury of improvisers who react, debate, and argue their opposing interpretations of the evidence. Season 1 of Deliberations explores the way a defendant's alternative sexual lifestyle inflames jurors' personal biases and influences discussions about her character, begging the question, is our jury system flawed? The goal of this podcast is to place listeners directly inside a deliberations room so they can attempt to understand the, sometimes ugly, processes by which guilt and innocence are ultimately decided. Visit iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast directory and search for Deliberations. Again, the podcast name is Deliberations. Check it out. I think you might enjoy it. As we followed the breadcrumbs of these previous searches, the greatest concentration of activity is in the area of Jennifer's condo and the Huntington on the Green. And of course that makes sense. Those are the known locations. But even more specifically, there's been some particular street names that continue to pop up as reference points for these searches. John Young Parkway, Orange Blossom Trail, and Oak Ridge Road come up time and time again. And it's that last one, Oak Ridge Road, where Scott and I have spent some additional time over the past few weeks.
So when you first walk up on it, like from the street, which is obviously where I parked over there by the church, it's a lot of grass and fairly high grass, and then there's some trees, but then it gets really dense after that. Like it's thick, like you think of sort of Florida. In Florida, you know, the with the high grass and, you know, maybe swampy back there. I'm not sure, to be honest. I didn't really go venturing too far back into the dense woods, but it gets thick and it's like overgrown and everything. So that you know, that's basically that entire area back there. I think for people to understand that, and it looks a lot bigger to me, at least being there, it looks a lot bigger than what you would see on the map as far as the area goes. So I think, yes, it would be very easy to conceal pretty much anything you'd want to conceal back there. There, you know, there's houses over to the side, and there's a short fence, you know, there's a normal sized fence. And obviously this is 11 years later, so I don't know what kind of fencing was there back in 2002. I didn't see anybody except I saw one person have to come out of the church door. That was it. That's all that I saw the whole time that I was up there.
They came out, like, in the back, like, by the woods, or where were they in the church?
No, they came out the front door. So, actually, as I was walking back up, somebody came out of the front door of the church. So, the church, the back of the church sort of butts up to the woods. So, if you came out of the front of the church, you wouldn't necessarily be able to see anything, but if you kind of came out maybe one of the side doors, the back doors of the church, you'd be back there by the thick wooded area. But this person just came out the front door, sort of saw me, and then I got back in the car and left. This is right as I was leaving, actually. Yeah, because I could see her porch from the near the wood line. So that tells me that she would be able to see the wood line from her porch. So, yeah, absolutely, I think so. And, again, I don't know what kind of fence there was, but even with a six-foot fence like this one was, you could still see – because the porch was up a little bit, and I could see where for sure, you know, I could see like the top of the door and stuff like that. So yeah, definitely. It's an interesting, creepy kind of a place. You can tell people don't go back there very often. I mean, it's an overgrown And in Florida, you know, anything that's overgrown like that and might be a little bit mucky, you don't go in there because of water moccasins and spiders and all sorts of other creatures and stuff. So it looks like a place that's not gone in very often. I could see at night this being a really creepy place at night because it's probably pitch black back there behind the church, the woods. I could see why somebody would need their headlights to be able to see anything, basically. And even during the day, it just sort of had an eerie type of a feeling when I was there. I didn't stay very long just because, you know, like I said, I got sort of back there by the wood line and, you know, just made sure that the line of sight was good and everything. And then I sort of ended up getting out of there after that. But it's if you were going to dump something and you needed to get rid of it, this would be a place to do it.
So why are we spending time in these woods? Well, because of a phone call several weeks prior.
Far as I can remember, is I lived on Wingate Drive in Orlando, not far from Jennifer Kesey. One night, I was my children were little, and we don't smoke in the house. And I was excited. We were watching movies on cable. I got up to go outside to smoke a cigarette. It was dark. I can't remember the time. I noticed two cars outside. At this point, I didn't know about Jennifer Kesey yet. So I see two cars, and one of them spotted me and started flashing his lights into the woods. There's like a church there, and behind the church was like the woods. It's a bunch of trees. It looked like the woods. But Oakridge, you know, we don't have woods. But anyway, he started flashing his lights, like warning somebody in those trees in the woods. There was two cars there that night. One was Jennifer Kesey's at the time. Like I said, I didn't know it was her yet. And then next to her car was another vehicle that I couldn't see because her car first and then the other vehicle was beside her car. And since it was nighttime, I couldn't see. I got a look at the gentleman that was there, and he was a tall, slim guy with a ponytail.
At some point after she'd noticed the car just outside of her backyard, she saw one of Jennifer Kesey's flyers with the picture of her car at one of her kids' schools.
So I took the flyer down and I came home and I told my husband, I said, this was the car that was in the backyard. And he looked at it. So I called the hotline number. And they didn't really do anything. The following day, they sent helicopters out. And that was the last I heard of it about that. But that was her car. Nobody ever approached me. Nobody. My husband at one point told me to mind my business because the guy looked over towards our house. And at the time, I had two small, you know, babies, little ones.
Mm-hmm.
So I did call the hotline twice after I saw it, but never got a response back or nothing. And at one point, I had pulled over because I seen her mom, Jennifer Kesey's mom, and father on John Young Parkway every weekend with their signs, help find Jennifer. And I had told them what happened, and she just told me, call the hotline. And I did, but I never got anything. Nobody ever came to my door. Another, we moved since, but the guy was tall. He had a ponytail, and he was slim. And there was another person, but never got to look at the other person because he was flashing his lights into the woods like he was warning somebody. There was two cars there that night. Somebody had to have driven the other car. That was Jennifer's car.
Okay.
I am 100% positive that was her car. The only thing that I have clear in my mind is that night when I saw the individual. Actually, when I opened my door, he looked over, went into the car, like not his whole body, but just to reach in to flash those headlights. And at that point, my husband told me, mind my business and shut the blinds. So I didn't get to see anybody else.
The other car was behind her car?
It was beside her car, not behind. It was beside. Like, it was Jennifer's car, and then right next to her car was another vehicle, but I couldn't see the other vehicle. I couldn't tell you the color, what kind of car it was, because it was beside it. Because he looked over. So I turned on the porch light, my porch light in the back, but not the backyard. The light was off. I turned it on to go outside. But when I saw him look over, and, you know, he was flashing his light, I went back inside to finish watching a movie we were watching.
Yet another ponytailed man, just like the one we heard about at the Huntington on the Green. And I don't like coincidences. But let's set that aside for a moment and talk about the location of this apparent event. This woman's house was on Wingate Drive, which is directly off of West Oak Ridge Road. Just a few homes off, in fact. The backyard that she describes in her audio overlooks a small wooded patch directly behind the Oak Ridge Baptist Church. There's more of like a grassy patch with a few trees, and then it gets more dense. For those of you unfamiliar with this part of Orlando, the location of the event is less than 3 miles from Jennifer's condo, just 2 miles from the Huntington on the Green, and for those of you that remember the sighting at Northbridge Apartments that we have yet to confirm, it's less than 2 miles away from there. In fact, Millennia Boulevard ends and dumps right into Oak Ridge Road. You heard the witness mention that she heard or saw helicopters, but this particular area was never specifically mentioned in a search and does not fall within any of the search boundaries that we're aware of. So, could the helicopter she heard have just been from one of the other searches that was going on nearby? Or was it not even related at all? It begs the question, was this location ever actually searched? And if the answer is no, it's pretty clear what needs to happen. I actually asked Jennifer's dad, Drew, if he knew specifically about this location being searched. He simply said that it didn't sound familiar. Of course, he said the areas around there, as I've already mentioned, were well known and searched pretty extensively. But this particular location wasn't searched to his immediate knowledge, and to ours either. We couldn't find any evidence of this actual location having been searched. If you're listening and you know that this location was searched, please let us know. But right now, we're operating under the assumption that it hasn't been. And so that's something that we need to figure out how to get done. Now back to the ponytail man for a moment. We can't forget about him, because this is now the second time that we've talked with someone who says they've seen such a man linked to Jennifer Kessie. The first was a woman in the parking lot at the Huntington on the Green, the day Jennifer was reported missing. Now a man with the same general description is seen in the woods with a car that a witness believes 100% to be Jennifer's black Chevy Malibu. What are the chances? If a ponytailed man had been spotted with a girl that looked like Jennifer both times, maybe we could chalk it up to being a lookalike. But this particular woman didn't see him with Jennifer. She saw him with what she believes was her car. And to us, this is important and can't be discounted. At this time, it's a lead that we consider credible and we feel needs followed up on. I said a moment ago that I don't like coincidences, and the ponytail is something I have a hard time overlooking in that sense. But based on what we know about the statement from the woman at the Huntington on the Green, that she believes she saw the man with the ponytail and Jennifer on the afternoon of January 24th, and the only time frame that this event behind the Oak Ridge Church could have taken place, if in fact it was Jennifer's car, would have been the night of January 23rd, makes it very difficult to put them together as related. So maybe in this case, a ponytail man is just a coincidence. Because if the night of January 23rd, behind Oak Ridge Church, a body was being disposed of, how could that same person then be in a different location, live and well, later the next day? Of course, that doesn't make sense. Now, there are other explanations. Maybe Jennifer wasn't with them behind the Oak Ridge Church. Maybe there was a disposal of cell phones, or getting rid of the briefcase or the other items that Jennifer had that night. There's probably several different avenues where we can reconcile both events into a single narrative. But what's the point? We don't know for a fact that Jennifer was actually involved in either one of these particular events that we've heard about from two separate witnesses. So why are we trying to force them together? One could have to do with this case, and one could not. Both could have to do with this case, or neither. At this point, we just don't know. But what I do know is expecting to put everything into a neat box is probably not going to happen in this case. Because if everything went into a neat box, would we still be looking for answers 11 years later? The point is, we're not to the point in this investigation yet where we can start crafting a narrative. We're still putting things out on the table. And so today, we put a new location on the map. As I previously alluded to, it's possible that police investigators have searched the property. But until we know that for sure, this is a priority. There may be nothing there. Perhaps because there never was, or maybe because the witness you heard from spooked the man and his accomplice away. Either way, it still needs to be looked into. Because there's a chance something's there. And that's something that we're working on now. We'll be back next week with our follow-up sidebar episode. And by now, you know the drill. Send your thoughts, comments, and questions using voicemail at 321-710-6304, email at unconcludedpod@gmail.com, or on social media, all of which are at unconcludedpod. Don't forget that if you think you may know something about the disappearance of Jennifer Kessie, anything at all, no matter how insignificant it may seem, call the Orlando Police Department and ask to speak to the detectives in charge of this case. And if you don't want to talk to them, call us. Talk to somebody, because it's time for Jennifer to come home. And on that note, don't forget about the GoFundMe account that the listeners have started. You can search for it on GoFundMe.com/helpbringJenniferKessieHome, or just by searching Jennifer Kessie. Every dollar helps and goes directly to the Kessie family. Music in this episode is by PC3. We'll see you next time.